Hegel, the Science of Logic, C. Contradiction. 1. Difference in general contains both its sides as moments. In diversity, these sides fall apart as indifferent to each other, and in opposition as such, they are the moments of difference, each determined by the other and hence only moments. But in opposition, these moments are equally determined within, indifferent to each other and mutually exclusive, self-subsisting determinations of reflection. One is the positive and the other the negative, but the former as a positive which is such within, and the latter as a negative which is such within. Each has indifferent self-subsistence for itself by virtue of having the reference to its other moment within it. Each moment is thus the whole self-contained opposition. As this whole, each moment is self-mediated through its other and contains this other. But it is also self-mediated through the non-being of its other and is, therefore, a unity existing for itself and excluding the other from itself. Since the self-subsisting determination of reflection excludes the other in the same respect as it contains it, and is self-subsisting for precisely this reason, in its self-subsistence the determination excludes its own self-subsistence from itself. For this self-subsistence consists in that it contains the determination which is other than it in itself and than it in itself and does not refer to anything external for just this reason, but no less immediately in that it is itself and excludes from itself the determination that negates it. And so it is contradiction. Difference as such is already implicitly contradiction, for it is the unity of beings which are only insofar as they are not one, and it is the separation of beings which are only insofar as they are separated in the same reference connecting them. The positive and the negative, however, are the posited contradiction, for as negative unities, they are precisely their self-positing and therein each the sublating of itself and the positing of its opposite. They constitute determining reflection as exclusive, for the excluding is one act of distinguishing, and each of the distinguished beings are exclusive, is itself the whole act of excluding, and so each excludes itself internally. If we look at the two self-subsisting determinations of reflection on their own, the positive is positiveness as reflected into likeness with itself, positiveness which is not reference to another, hence subsistence inasmuch as the positiveness is sublated and excluded, but with this positive makes itself into the reference of a non-being, into a positiveness. In this way the positive is contradiction in that as the positing of self-identity by the excluding of the negative. It makes itself into a negative, hence into the other which it excludes from itself. This last, as excluded, is posited free of the one that excludes, hence as reflected into itself and itself as excluding. The reflection that excludes is thus the positing of the positive as excluding the other, so that this positing immediately is the positing of its other which excludes it. This is the absolute contradiction of the positive, but is immediately the absolute contradiction of the negative, the positing of both in one reflection. Considered in itself as against the positive, the negative is positiveness as reflected into unlikeness to itself, the negative as negative. But the negative is itself the unlike, the non-being of another. Consequently, reflection is in its unlikeness its reference rather to itself. Negation in general is the negative as quality or immediate determinateness, but taken as negative, it is referred to the negative of itself, to its other. If this second negative is taken only as identical with the first, then it is also only immediate, just like the first. They are not taken, therefore, as each the other of the other, hence not as negatives. The negative is not at all an immediate, But now, since each is moreover equally the same as what the other is, this reference connecting them as unequal is just as much their identical connection. This is therefore the same contradiction which the positive is, namely positiveness or negation as self-reference. But the positive is only implicitly this contradiction, is contradiction only in itself. The negative, on the contrary, is the posited contradiction, for in its reflection into itself, as a negative which is in and for itself, or a negative which is identical with itself, its determination is to be the non-identical, the exclusion of identity. The negative is this, to be identical with itself over against identity, and consequently, because of this excluding reflection, to exclude itself from itself. The negative is therefore the whole opposition, the opposition which, as opposition, rests upon itself, distinction that absolutely does not refer itself to another, distinction which, as opposition, excludes identity from itself, but thereby also excludes itself, for as reference to itself, it determines itself as the very identity which it excludes. 2. Contradiction resolves itself. In the self-excluding reflection we have just considered the positive and the negative, each in its self-subsistence sublates itself. Each is simply the passing over, or rather the self-translating of itself into its opposite. This internal ceaseless vanishing of the opposites is the first unity that arises by virtue of contradiction. It is the null. But contradiction does not contain merely the negative, it also contains the positive. Or the self-excluding reflection is at the same time positing reflection. The result of contradiction is not only the null. The positive and the negative constitute the positiveness of the self-subsistence. Their own self-negation sublates it. It is this positiveness which in truth founders to the ground in contradiction. The immanent reflection by virtue of which the sides of opposition are turned into self-subsistent self-references is, first of all, their self-subsistence as distinct moments. Thus they are this self-subsistence only in themselves, for they are still opposites, and that they are in themselves self-subsistent constitutes their positiveness. But their excluding reflection sublates this positiveness, turns them into self-subsistent beings existing in and for themselves, such as are self-subsistent not only in themselves but by virtue of their negative reference to their other. In this way their self-subsistence is also posited. But further, by thus being posited as self-subsistent, they make themselves into a positiveness. They fate themselves to founder, since they determine themselves as self-identical. Yet in their self-identity they are rather the negative, a self-identity which is reference to other. However, on closer examination, this excluding reflection is not only this formal determination. It is self-subsistence existing in itself, and the sublating of this positiveness. Is only through this sublating a unity that exists for itself and is in fact self-subsistent. Of course, through the sublating of otherness or positiveness, positiveness or the negative of an other is indeed present again. But in fact, this negation is not just a return to the first immediate reference to the other, is not positiveness as sublated immediacy, but positiveness as sublated positiveness. The excluding reflection of self-subsistence, since it is excluding, makes itself a positiveness, but is just as much the sublation of its positiveness. It is sublating reference to itself. In that reference, it first sublates the negative, and it secondly posits itself as a negative. And it is only this posited negative that it sublates. In sublating the negative, it both posits and sublates it at the same time. In this way, the exclusive determination is itself that other of itself of which it is the negation. The sublation of this positiveness is not, therefore, once more positiveness as the negative of another, but is self-withdrawal, positive self-unity. Self-subsistence is thus unity that turns back into itself by virtue of its own negation, for it turns into itself through the negation of its positiveness. It is the unity of essence, to be identical with itself through the negation not of another, but of itself. 3. According to this positive side, since self-subsistence in opposition, as excluding reflection, makes itself into a positiveness and equally sublates this positiveness. Not only has opposition foundered, but in foundering it has gone back to its foundation, to its ground. The excluding reflection of the self-subsisting opposition turns it into a negative, something only posited. It thereby reduces its formerly self-subsisting determinations, the positive and the negative, to the two determinations which are only determinations, and the positiveness, since it is now made into positiveness, has simply gone back to its unity with itself. It is simple essence, but essence as ground. Through the sublating of the determinations of essence, which are in themselves self-contradictory, essence is restored, but restored in the determination of an exclusive reflective unity, a simple unity which determines itself as negation, but in this positiveness is immediately like itself and withdrawn into itself. In the first place, therefore, because of its contradiction, the self-subsisting opposition goes back into a ground. This opposition is what comes first, the immediate from which the beginning is made, while the sublated opposition or the sublated positiveness is itself a positiveness. Accordingly, essence is as ground a positiveness, something that has become. But conversely, only this has been posited, namely that the opposition or the positiveness is something sublated, only is as positiveness. As ground, therefore, essence is excluding reflection because it makes itself into a positiveness, because the opposition from which the start was just now made and was the immediate is the merely posited determinate self-subsistence of essence. Because opposition only sublates within itself within, whereas essence is in its determinateness reflected into itself. As ground, therefore, essence excludes itself from itself, it posits itself, its positiveness, which is what is excluded. Is only as positiveness, as identity of the negative with itself. This self-subsistent is the negative posited as the negative something self-contradictory, which consequently remains in the essence as in its ground. The resolved contradiction is therefore ground, essence as unity of the positive and the negative. In opposition, determinateness has progressed to self-subsistence, but ground is this self-subsistence as completed. In it, the negative is self-subsistent essence, but as negative and as self-identical in this negativity, ground is thus equally the positive. In ground, therefore, opposition and its contradiction are just as much removed as preserved. Ground is essence as positive self-identity, which, however, at the same time refers itself to itself as negativity and therefore determines itself, making itself into an excluded positiveness. But this positiveness is the whole self-subsisting essence, and essence is ground, self-identical in its negation and positive. The self-contradictory self-subsistent opposition was itself therefore already ground. All that was added to it was the determination of self-unity, which emerges as each of the self-subsisting opposites sublates itself and makes itself into its other, thereby founders and sinks to the ground, but therein also reunites itself with itself. Thus, in this foundering, that is, in its positiveness or in the negation, it rather is for the first time the essence that is reflected into itself and self-identical. Remark 1. The positive and the negative are the same. This is the maxim of external reflection, for it sets up a comparison between the two terms, but it is not an external comparison that should be drawn between them, or, for that matter, between any two other categories. The categories must rather be considered on their own, that is to say, it is their own reflection that must be considered. And we have seen in this reflection, that each is the reflective shining of itself in the other, and itself the positing of itself as the other. Superficial thought that does not consider the positive and the negative as they are in themselves can of course be made aware of the instability of these distinct terms, which it assumes to be fixed in their opposition to each other, by being referred to the act of comparing. The most cursory experiment in reflective thought will demonstrate that if something is determined as a positive and is then taken as the starting point, the same something will have immediately turned in the process into a negative, and vice versa, anything negatively determined will have turned into a positive. It will demonstrate that reflective thinking gets confused and runs into contradictions in these determinations. Ignorance of their nature will interpret this confusion as a misstep that should not occur and will ascribe it to a subjective failure. Indeed, the shifting back and forth from one determination to the other will remain mere confusion as long as there is no awareness of the necessity of the alternation. But even to external reflection, it will be a matter of simple consideration that the positive, to start with, is not a simple identity, but is rather, on the one hand, opposed to the negative, has meaning only in this reference to it, and therefore entails the negative in its very concept, and, on the other hand, is inherently the self-referring negation of mere positiveness, or of the negative, and therefore is itself implicitly the absolute negation. Similarly, the negative that stands over against the positive has meaning only in thus referring to its other. It contains it, therefore, in its concept. But the negative has a self-subsistence of its own also without the reference to the positive. It is self-identical, thus it is itself what the positive was supposed to be. The opposition of positive and negative is normally taken in the sense that the former, even though its name conveys positiveness, is to be supposed as objective. The latter, instead, as something subjective that only belongs to an external reflection and has nothing to do with what exists objectively in and for itself, even is for the latter nothing at all. And, in fact, if the negative only expressed a subjectively arbitrary abstraction or a determination of external comparison, then it would indeed be for the positive nothing at all, that is, there would be no reference in the positive to such an empty abstraction. But then its determination that it is a positive would equally be only external to it. As an example of the fixed opposition of these determinations of reflection, take light in general to be the solely positive, and darkness the solely negative, but light has, in its unending expansion and power to suscitate and vivify, the nature of absolute negativity. Darkness, on the other hand, as a non-manifold or as the non-self-differentiating womb of generation, is simple self-identity, the positive. In the way it is taken, it is only a negative, in the sense that it is the mere absence of light, nothing at all for itself, so that light, in referring to it, would not be referring to another, but purely to itself, would therefore simply disappear before it. But surely light is dimmed to grey by darkness, and besides this merely quantitative alteration, it also suffers the qualitative one of being determined as colour by referring to darkness. So also virtue, for example, is not without struggle. It is rather the highest, the perfect struggle, and thus not only a positive, but rather absolute negativity. Virtue is virtue not just by comparison to vice, but for the opposition and the combat in it. Or again, vice is not only the lack of virtue, innocence too is such a lack, and distinct from virtue not just in the eyes of an external reflection, but is opposed to virtue in itself. It is evil. Evil consists in maintaining one's own ground as against the good. It is positive negativity. Innocence, on the other hand, as the lack of both good and evil, is indifferent to these determinations, is neither positive nor negative. But at the same time, this lack must be taken also as a determinateness, and as such, on the one hand, it is to be considered as the positive nature of something just as, on the other, as referring to an opposite. And thus all natures fall from innocence, from their indifferent self-identity. Because of what they are in themselves, they refer to their other, and therefore they cause themselves to founder, or positively expressed, they return to their ground. Truth, also, is the positive as the knowledge that agrees with the object, but it is this likeness to itself only insofar as knowledge has related itself negatively to the other, has penetrated the object and sublated the negation which the latter is. Error is something positive as the self-aware and deliberate assertion of something which has no existence in and for itself. Ignorance, for its part, is either something indifferent to truth and error, hence neither positively nor negatively determined, its determination a lack and thus the domain of external reflection, or objectively taken as the defining determination of a nature, an instinct that is directed against itself, a negative containing a positive direction within it. To perceive and to be mindful of this nature of the determinations of reflection is among the most important steps in cognition, that their truth consists only in their reference to one another, and hence that each contains the other within its very concept. Without this recognition, no proper step in philosophy can be made. Remark 2. The determination of opposition has equally been made into a proposition, the so-called principle of the excluded middle. Something is either A or not A, there is no third. This principle contains first that everything is an opposite determined either as positive or as negative. It is an important principle necessary because identity passes over into diversity and diversity into opposition. But this is not the sense in which it is normally understood, for its ordinary meaning amounts rather to just this, that of all predicates, either this one here or its non-being comes to a thing. Here the opposite of the predicate signifies a mere lack or rather indeterminateness, and the principle is so insignificant that it is hardly worth the effort of enunciating it. If the predicates green, sweet, square are taken, and it is assumed that they are all taken, and then it is said of spirit that it is either sweet or not sweet, green or not green, and so on, this is a triviality that leads nowhere. Determinateness, the predicate, is referred to something. This something is determined, the principle says. Now what the principle ought essentially to imply is that the determinateness should further determine itself, that it become determinateness in itself, opposition. Instead of this, however, it only goes in the trivial sense just mentioned, from determinateness over to its non-being in general, goes back to indeterminateness. The principle of the excluded middle is further distinguished from the previously examined principles of identity or contradiction that said nothing is A and not A at the same time. What this implies is that there is nothing which is not either A or not A, that there is no third that would be indifferent to that opposition, but in fact a third indifferent to it is given in the principle itself, for the A itself is there. This A is neither plus A nor minus A, and just as much also plus A and minus A. The something which ought to have been either plus A or minus A is here attached to the plus A as well as the minus A, and again inasmuch as it is attached to the A. It ought not to be attached to the minus A, just as it ought not to be attached to the A inasmuch as it is to the not A. The something itself is therefore the third which ought to have been excluded. Since in this something the opposite determinations are equally posited and sublated, the third which is here in the shape of an inert something, when taken more profoundly, is the unity of the reflection into which the opposition returns as into ground. Remark 3. Now, if the first determinations of reflection, identity, diversity, and opposition have been formulated each as a principle, all the more should the one determination into which they pass over as in their truth, namely contradiction, be grasped and enunciated as a principle. All things are in themselves contradictory, in the sense, moreover, that as contrasted with the other, this proposition expresses rather the truth and the essence of things. The contradiction that emerges in opposition is only the developed nothing which is contained in identity and came to the fore in the claim that the principle of identity says nothing. This negation further determines itself into difference and into opposition, which is now the posited contradiction. It is, however, one of the basic prejudices of previous logic and of ordinary thought that contradiction is not as essential and imminent a determination as identity. But in fact, if order of precedence were an issue, and the two determinations were to be held separate, it would be the principle of contradiction that should be taken as the more profound and the more essential. For in contrast to it, identity is only the determination of simple immediacy, of inert being, whereas contradiction is the root of all movement and life. It is only insofar as something has a contradiction within it that it moves, is possessed of instinct and activity. Contradiction is ordinarily the first to be kept away from things, away from any existent and from the true, as the saying goes, there is nothing contradictory. For the rest, it is relegated to the subjective reflection which allegedly first posits it by way of reference and comparison, and even within this reflection it is not really there, for the contradictory cannot supposedly be represented or taught. Whether it occurs in actuality or in the reflection of thought, it is universally reckoned as an accident, an abnormality as it were, a momentary fit of sickness. Now as regards to the claim that there is no contradiction, that none is to be found, we need not worry on account of such protestations. An absolute determination of essence must be found in every experience, in anything actual, just as in every concept. We have already remarked this much earlier on in connection with the infinite, which is contradiction as displayed in the sphere of being. But ordinary experience itself testifies that there do exist at least a great many contradictory things, contradictory dispositions, etc., of which the contradiction is present not in any external reflection, but right in them. Nor is contradiction to be taken as an abnormality which happens only here and there. but it is rather the negative in its essential determination, the principle of all self-movement, which consists in nothing else than in the display of contradiction. External sensuous motion is itself contradiction's immediate existence. Something moves not because now it is here and there at another now, but because in one and the same now it is here and not here. Because in this here it is and is not at the same time. One must concede to the dialecticians of old the contradictions which they pointed to in motion. But what follows from them is not that motion is not, but that it is rather contradiction as existent. Internal self-movement, self-movement proper, drive in general, the appetite or nisus of the monad, the entelechy of the absolutely simple essence, is likewise nothing else than that something is, in itself, itself, and the lack of itself, the negative, in one and the same respect. Abstract self-identity is not yet vitality, but a positive, since implicitly it is a negativity, goes out of itself and sets its alteration in motion. Something is alive, therefore, only to the extent that it contains contradiction within itself, indeed forces this to hold and endure contradiction within. If, on the contrary, a concrete existent were not capable of overreaching its positive determination and grasping the negative one at the same time, holding the two firmly together, if it were not capable of harboring contradiction within it, it would not then be a living unity as such, not a ground, and in contradiction it would founder and sink to the ground. Speculative thought consists only in this, in holding firm to contradiction and to itself in the contradiction, but not in the sense that, as it happens in ordinary thought, it would let itself be ruled by it and allow it to dissolve its determinations into just other determinations or into nothing. If to ordinary thought the contradiction which is in motion, in a drive and the like, remains concealed in the simplicity of such determinations, contradiction is, on the other hand, immediately displayed in the determinations of relation. The most trivial of examples, above and under, right and left, father and son, and so on, at infinitum, all contain opposition within one and the same term. Above is what under is not. Above is determined by just this, not to be under, and is only to the extent that an under is, and contrariwise. Father is the other of son, and son the other of father, and each is only as this other of the other, and the one determination is at the same time only with reference to the other, their being is one subsisting. The father is indeed something for itself outside this reference to the son, but then he is not father but a man, in general. The same applies to above and under, right and left. They too are something outside the reference when reflected into themselves, but just places in general. Opposites entail contradiction inasmuch as, in negatively referring to each other, they sublate each other reciprocally and are indifferent to each other. Ordinary thought, when it passes over to the moment of indifference, forgets there the negative unity of the opposites and therefore holds on to them only as different in general. And, of course, in this general determination, right is no longer right, left no longer left, and so on. But if right and left are in fact there present to the thought, then they are present to it in determinations which are self-negating, each negating itself in the other, and yet in this unity also not negating itself, but each existing indifferently for itself. Ordinary thought, therefore, does not have contradiction everywhere for content, but fails to become aware of it. It remains an external reflection that simply shifts from likeness to unlikeness, or from the negative reference connecting distinct terms to their immanent reflectedness. It holds these two determinations apart, external to each other, and has only them in mind, not the transition from the one to the other, which is the essential and that which contains the contradiction. The speculative reflection of spirit, to mention it here, consists on the contrary in grasping and enunciating contradiction, although it might not express the concept of things and their relations, and has only representational determinations for its content. It nevertheless connects these in a reference that contains their contradiction and lets their concept reflectively shine through the contradiction. But thoughtful reason sharpens, as it were, the blunt difference of diverse terms, the mere manifold of representation, to essential distinction, to opposition. Only when driven to the extreme of contradiction are the many of that manifold quickened and alive to each other. They hold the negativity in them, which is the inner pulse of self-movement and life. We have already remarked concerning the ontological proof of God's existence that the determination on which it is based is that of the sum total of all realities. It is customary regarding this determination first to demonstrate that it is possible because it entails no contradiction, since reality is taken here only as reality without restrictions. We pointed out that this concept, the sum total of all realities, is thereby reduced to simple indeterminate being, or if the realities are in fact taken as severally determinate, to the sum total of all negations. And if the distinction differentiating them is then taken with great precision, the difference turns into opposition and consequently into contradiction, and the sum total of all realities in general into absolute internal contradiction. The usual horror which ordinary, not speculative thought has of contradiction, as nature has of the vacuum, rejects this consequence, for it remains at the one-sided consideration that contradiction resolves into nothing without recognizing its positive side, where it becomes absolute activity and absolute ground. The upshot of this examination of the nature of contradiction is that if a contradiction can be pointed out in something, by itself this is still not, as it were, a blemish, not a defect or failure. On the contrary, every determination, anything concrete, every concept, is essentially a unity of distinguished and distinguishable elements, which by virtue of the determinate essential difference pass over into elements which are contradictory. This contradictoriness, of course, resolves itself into nothing. It goes back into its negative unity. A thing, a subject, a concept is then precisely this negative unity. It is something inherently self-contradictory, but it is no less the resolved contradiction. It is the ground which contains the determination it bears. The thing, the subject, or the concept, each as reflected into itself within its sphere, is their contradiction as resolved. But the whole sphere of each is in turn determinate, diverse, and therefore finite. And this means contradictory. This sphere is not itself the resolution of its higher contradiction, but has yet a higher sphere for its negative unity, for its ground. Finite things in their indifferent variety are therefore just this, to be contradictory, internally fractured and bound to return to their ground, as we shall see in due course. The true inference from the finite and accidental to an absolutely necessary being does not consist in inferring the latter from that finite and accidental as a being which is and remains the ground of the inference, but from it as a being which is only falling as accidentally from the Latin cadere, immediately conveys, a being inherently self-contradictory. or rather the inference consists in demonstrating that accidental being makes in itself its return to its ground and is there sublated. In addition, that in this return to the ground, it posits the latter in such a manner that it makes itself rather into a positiveness. In customary inference, the being of the finite appears to be the ground of the absolute, because the finite is, the absolute is. But the truth is that the absolute is because the finite is the imminently self-contradictory opposition, because it is not. In the former meaning, the conclusion is that the being of the finite is the being of the absolute, but in the latter, that the non-being of the finite is the being of the absolute.